Hey guys, welcome to episode 11 of the Mysterious Benedict Society Read Aloud Podcast Book 4. Today we'll be reading chapter 11, but first a recap of chapter 10. Renner remembered that McCracken had the letter on him from Constance's vision when the police captured him, and that they could now get a copy. The letter was from Mr. Curtin to the Tin Man, as you might have expected, and he had quite a lot to say. To put it simply, Mr. Curtin discovered a brain serum Mr. Benedict was working on for Constance. He explained how he was going to escape his prison by drinking poison tea with Mr. Benedict, for then Mr. Benedict would communicate with the children to bring him an antidote. The Tin Man would follow them and then set Mr. Curtin free, and have the brain serum, which is the antidote to the poison as well. After reading the letter, the others asked Constance to contact Mr. Benedict. Turns out he had already drunk the tea, but doesn't want them to come for him for their safety. Then the children went back to Mr. Benedict's riddle, and Rennie, as always, has figured at least some of it out. So that's the end of the summary, guys. And I don't have any shout-outs, but I have a question from Ashley about whether I could post 3 days a week instead of two. I totally understand that you guys are anxious to know what happens next, but unfortunately, I just do not have the time to post more than 2 days a week for you. I'm so sorry and would 100% post more often if I could, but right now I'm just not in a position to do that. Sorry guys, but I hope you are having a fantastic day and enjoy the episode. Chapter 11. Key Questions. The sitting room, Kate declared as I hurried down the hallway. She tapped her nose and pointed at herself. One who stands in a sitting room is defying the name of the room. Exactly, Rennie said, glancing back. Kind of like being in the dining room and not dining, right? Right, Ty exclaimed. He was walking behind Constance with his arms wrapped around the bucket, and his bowl of oatmeal was balanced on its flip top. Oh no, I forgot my spoon! He started to turn back, but Kate scooped him up, bucket and bowl and all, and when she had deposited him in the sitting room, she pronounced a shiny spoon, as if by magic. Orion, Rennie said, crossing the room to take one of the paintings from the wall. Do you remember Sticky telling you the name of this constellation, Ty? Well, guess what? In Greek mythology, Orion is known as the hunter. Ty's mouthful of sugary oatmeal nodded vigorously. Dare hunts the hunter in his frame, Kate said. Of course, the picture frame. But why does he say dare, do you think? Is there something dangerous about taking down the painting? Poetic license, Constance said with a shrug. Ty was fascinated. There's a license for poetry? What? No, Constance said. Poetic license means having the freedom to bend the rules to create whatever kind of effect you want. I just meant that Dad wrote it that way for the rhyme. Dare hunt has the same sound as where one from the first line. It sure does, said Ty agreeably. He directed another spoonful of oatmeal into his mouth, which for no apparent reason he was opening far wider than necessary. Rennie carefully leaned against the painting in the wall, with his back facing them. The frame behind the canvas had been covered with heavy brown paper, held in place by small metal fasteners. Strike the clinches from their floor, he murmured. More poetic license. I think he just means remove the fasteners. Kate took out her Swiss Army knife. A clinch can refer to a nail or other kinds of fasteners, she said to Ty. She began removing the fasteners at high speed. I know that, of course, Ty replied. Oh, really? Said Kate with an arched eyebrow. When did you learn that? Just now. It doesn't quite work that way, sport, Kate said, carefully peeling the brown paper away from the frame. There in the hollow space behind the painting canvas was a sealed plastic pouch. It appeared to contain folders, and a message had been taped to the outside. This is written in Tamil, said Kate, who had learned some Tamil from Rennie and his mother, Miss Permal, over the years, but could only read a little, and with difficulty. Kate handed the pouch to Rennie. Obviously, Mr. Benedict was counting on you to be here. Rennie read the message at a glance. Not just me, this says, remember the Duxworth? What a sticky problem. Hey, Duxworth, Ty exclaimed. That was the plant that makes you all fall asleep. Yep, Kate said, but what does this have to do with Sticky? That's the question. Sticky was the only one to see Duxworth under a microscope, Constance said. Maybe that matters somehow. Rennie pursed his lips. He turned the pouch around two or three times in his hands. The thing is, he said slowly, if whatever in here needs to be read by Sticky, Mr. Benedict could have just counted on us to figure that out. So why did he place this message on the outside of the pouch? Because he wants Sticky to be here when we open it, Constance suggested. But why would that matter so much? This pouch is airtight, Rennie observed. Maybe its contents will be affected when they're exposed to fresh air. Ty, who had been busily tapping his nose and pointing his finger every time someone spoke, piped up. The Duxworth got disintegrated really fast. Disintegrated, Kate said. It's true. If it wasn't for the perfect conditions, it just crumbled to dust. So what do you think, Rennie? Maybe Sticky is the only one who can read these papers fast enough?
And memorize them, Rennie said, nodding.
Yes, I think so. I think these are all security measures. Whatever's inside this pouch, Mr. Benedict meant it for us and only us. But listen, he added just as Kate, he could tell, was heading for the intercom. Let's take the pressure off as much as possible. We can just ask Sticky to read the papers because Mr. Benedict wants him to, which is true.
You're suggesting we don't tell him everything? Kate furrowed her brow.
Not sure I'm crazy about that idea, Rennie.
Rennie grimaced. His conscience had been bothering him enough already, but this was a critical moment. Wouldn't it be wrong not to avoid risk if possible?
I'm only suggesting, he said, that we don't have to mention that there might be a time limit. Sticky's so fast it shouldn't matter, right? I'm just trying to spare him the pressure, which would be, you know, considerable.
Maybe you're right, Kate conceded reluctantly.
I don't like it, but it's true that absolutely everything could depend on whether he succeeds.
Constance gave Kate a bleak look. I was actually trying not to think of it like that.
Think of it like what? Asked Ty, who was furiously scraping the last of his oatmeal out of the bowl and seemed not to have been paying attention.
She's worried you're going to eat all the sugar in the house, Kate said.
No, she isn't, Ty cried with a laugh.
I am a little bit, Constance muttered.
Down in the blab, Sticky Washington was checking the supply cabinets, making notes, checking the computers, there were several, making more notes, checking the workbenches, no notes, all in perfect silence, for he had activated the husher. Sticky had come here to clear his mind, which for him meant showing worrisome information aside, if only for a few minutes, by focusing on other information. It was like eating a roll while waiting for hot soup to cool. Soon he'd be able to handle the soup. As for the husher, he discovered long ago that silence helped. Silence reduced distractions. Silence also allowed Sticky to yell with frustration and not be heard, something he suddenly felt a powerful need to do. He sat down his clipboard, carefully removed his spectacles, threw back his head and yelled at the top of his lungs. Why didn't I think of that? Why? Come on, brain, come on! He jumped up and down a few times, stomping the concrete floor as hard as he could, all in perfect silence. Breathing hard, he dug a cloth out of his pocket and gave his spectacles lenses a thorough polishing. Then he resettled them on his nose. Okay, he thought, feeling calmer. Okay. Sticky's mind returned to the nightmare he'd awakened from this morning. All those scorpions on the floor. Contrary to what others might expect, he didn't imagine they represented Tin Men. You're dwelling on your mistakes again, his mother said to him not too long ago, not for the first time. It's good to acknowledge them, but I do wish you'd not forget everything you get right. They'd been having breakfast in their home across the street. Sticky had just awakened from a similar dream. Sticky's father nodded his agreement, which for such a profoundly quiet man was a significant contribution to the discussion.
I know, Sticky had said, taking up a glass of grape juice and setting it down again. You're right, Mom. I know that. I just get so frustrated. I never see Rennie make the mistakes I do.
His mother regarded him with hooded eyes. Can Rennie do all the things you can do?
Sticky sighed and rubbed his scalp.
No, I know. I just don't like making mistakes.
Rennie makes his own share of mistakes, love, said Sticky's mom. You just don't dwell on those. Do you know who probably does?
Sticky pursed his lips. No idea.
Constance?
They all chuckled at this. Well, she probably does too, Sticky's mom admitted. And on everyone else's. But there's a reason you know that your father and I are comfortable with you making your own decisions. You're doing a wonderful job leading your life. We only hope you'll come to visit us for love and support, and maybe sometimes even advice. Who knows?
I'll always come to you for all those things, Sticky said, rounding the table to hug his parents, advice included.
Now in the blab, Sticky took a deep breath and let it out. He tapped a pencil on the clipboard. Yes, he'd forgotten the chemicals on the rooftop patio, and it hadn't occurred to him to get a copy of Mr. Curtin's letter, and he hadn't thought to ask Ty about his reading abilities before scanning the letter. That was okay. He couldn't think of everything. He was who he was, and that was enough. He knew that. He believed it. And now it was time to rejoin his friends. Sticky went to the husher and switched it off.
In the world are you? Constance's voice was screeching through the intercom speaker. Are you at a spa getting a massage or what? Did it ever occur to you that we might...
Intercom off, Sticky said quickly. The speaker went silent. He took another deep breath and reached once more for his polishing cloth.
Check this out, Rennie said as Sticky entered the sitting room. He handed over the plastic pouch, realizing a sudden urge to tell his friend everything. Was this a mistake after all, or did he just feel guilty even though he was trying to do the right thing?
Everyone formed a semicircle around Sticky, who studied the plastic pouch.
Remember the duck's work, he muttered, for he could read almost languages, including Tamil.
I wonder what he means exactly.
I'm sure we'll find out, Rennie said. Mr. Benedict clearly wants you to be the one to read those papers, though. Sticky nodded. It sure looks that way. Okay, let's see what we have here. He unsealed the pouch. A strong chemical odor filled the room, and all of them wrinkled their noses. We look like bunnies, Ty exclaimed. Sticky's brow was wrinkled in addition to his nose, for he was pondering the source of the odor. He paused, looking thoughtfully to the side and saying mostly to himself, What do you suppose that's about? I can name at least 5 chemical agents that smell like that. Any of them dangerous? Rennie asked quickly. Sticky shrugged. No, but some have some curious effects when combined. Maybe the answer will be in those papers, Rennie interrupted. A hint of annoyance appeared on Sticky's face. Okay, that's true enough, he said, and removed the contents from the pouch. After a process of careful, and to his friends agonizingly slow, unfolding, those contents were revealed to be blueprints. 3 very large sheets of paper covered with diagrams of buildings, some of the drawings obviously incomplete, others represented in great detail. The margins were filled with a variety of tiny sketches and notes written in 3 different colors of ink. The semicircle of onlookers craned their necks to get a glimpse of what Sticky was seeing. At least 3 of them felt a little sick. The amount of information on those pages was overwhelming. Let me take these to the dining room table, Sticky said, as he pursued the blueprints. I'd like to spread them out. Let's just do it right here, Kay said. We can use the floor. Sticky gave her a puzzled look. It would be easier on a table, but whatever. He placed the 3 pages side by side on the floor and knelt over them. He gave a low whistle. This required a lot of work. Rennie noticed Ty about to say something and put a finger to his lips. Ty nodded and dutifully covered his mouth. He had already been advised that they should keep as quiet as possible to allow Sticky to concentrate. The thing is, Sticky said, there's a lot of contradictory information on here. There are 3 separate keys, red, gold, and blue. Do you see the different colors? He looked up confirmation and everyone nodded quickly. Okay, well, each key is consistent within itself, but not with either of the others. I think we can trust only one of the keys, but which one? He leaned back on his haunches and looked thoughtfully to the side again. I wonder if he expects me to figure it out just by studying the schematics. If so, I'm not sure how yet. Maybe there's some kind of other clue. We can all think about it together, Rennie said as casually as he could. Right now, you can just make sure you've looked carefully at everything and then... Now Sticky was visibly frustrated, and with a sharp look at Rennie, he said, So I can't even take 5 seconds to think about something? And do you think I'm not going to look carefully? For crying out loud, Rennie, everything doesn't have to be done exactly your way. I'm sorry, George, Rennie said, averting his eyes. You're right. He put his hands behind his back and clenched his fists. Sticky sighed. Well, I certainly don't want to argue about it. I'm sorry, too. He turned his back to the blueprints. After only a moment, however, he looked up again. The odor has faded, hasn't it? Or is it that I'd just gotten used to it? The odor had faded, indeed, almost entirely, and the others hastened to agree that this was the case. Sticky said, that narrows the options. About the chemicals, I mean. Ty shuffled close to Constance and tugged on her sleeve. She bent down so that he could whisper in his ear. Shouldn't he be going faster? It was indeed a whisper, but not an especially soft one. And in that quiet room, at such close quarters, it might as well have been a shout. Sticky stiffened. He jerked his gaze toward Ty and Constance, then at Kate and Rennie. Wait a minute. Is there some kind of time constraint I'm unaware of? Their expressions, at once sheepish and anxious, spoke every bit as loudly as Ty's whisper had. Oh, great, he moaned, immediately returning to the blueprints. Everyone leaned slightly forward, and everyone saw, at the same time, the markings of the pages growing fainter. The papers themselves weren't disintegrating, but they were going blank. Everyone held their breath, including Sticky, who stared and stared. In less than a minute, there was nothing left to stare at. The silence held. No one spoke. Then Sticky released his breath and looked up. Don't worry, I got it all, he said, and smiling at their sighs and relieved expressions, he added. I actually had it almost immediately, you know. I've just been making sure I didn't miss anything. You could have told us, Constance snapped. That would have been nice. Yeah, and you could have told me the ink was going to disappear. We didn't know it would, Ty said cheerfully. We thought the paper was going to disintegrate. Sticky looked at Ty and bit his lip. After a moment, he said, Did you think that was interesting, Ty, seeing the ink disappear? It was amazing, Ty exclaimed. Sticky smiled, nodded, and gathered up the empty pages. Do you want to keep these? I can keep them, Sticky whispered as Sticky handed them over. Thank you so much. Kate, can I put them in your bucket? Knock yourself out, replied Kate with a wink. Thank you so much, Ty squealed, and with great reverence he folded the blank sheets of paper and placed them inside the bucket. As Ty busied himself with Kate's bucket under the dining room table, the others sat around it, discussing what Sticky had learned. Or rather, they were going to discuss it as soon as Sticky was ready. He felt so annoyed with his friends, especially with Rennie, whose idea he knew it had been to come in the dark, that he declared himself hungry again, though he really wasn't. He only wanted a minute to calm down, and he claimed it by going into the kitchen. By the time he returned with an entire stack of fresh toast, settled into his chair, and poured more tea for everyone, his friends were almost quaking with impatience. But all, even Constance, was careful not to show it. "So about these conflicting keys," Rennie said gently, passing Sticky the marmalade. "What kind of information do they relate to?" "The location of the entrances, the layouts of certain buildings, schematics for various alarm systems, several other things. If you were trying to infiltrate the multiple layers of security, your choices would depend entirely on what color key you trust." Here Siggy interrupted himself with a grunt of frustration. In preparation for the marmalade, he was trying to spread butter on his first slice of toast, which he kept accidentally tearing with his table knife. "That even includes your approach to the buildings, which makes me think that two out of the three routes would lead you directly into traps." "That's great," Constance muttered. "Really, really great. I'm loving this." Kate was eyeing Stiggy's clumsy efforts to spread the butter on his toast. She had to make herself look away. "There are also lots of cryptic notes," Sticky went on. "Directions written like riddles. You could spend ages trying to figure them all out, which might not even be possible, since we have to consider that some of the notes could be simply gibberish, meant to engage your attention while offering zero hope of finding a solution. But even if you succeeded, how would you know which of them heed to and which to disregard?" He looked dejectedly at his mangled toast. "It's colossally tricky." "It doesn't have to be, though," Kate said cheerfully. She presented him with the perfectly intact slice of toast she had just buttered for him. "Once we know how to do it, right? We just have to figure out which key to use, and then rely on our different skill sets. Mr. Benedict obviously made those blueprints specifically for us, so he knows we can do it." "Why do you think Dad hid the blueprints anyway?" Constance asked. "As if he expected us to need them for some reason, why not tell us ahead of time?" "You said it yourself earlier," Rennie said. "Mr. Benedict always has multiple backup plans. He probably had a suspicion that we might need them," said Day. "But he couldn't share them with us because we don't have the proper security clearances. I'm guessing there's a clause in his contract that allows him to share information with trusted individuals, but only in the case of dire emergency." "I would think this qualifies," Constance said. "Imagine if the 10 minutes searched the house," Rennie went on, "or if anyone for that matter. First of all, there's almost no chance they would find the blueprints, but even if they did, if they didn't happen to read to Mill, they would probably open the pouch without realizing they would only have a minute or two to study the blueprints." "And even if they had a camera ready," said Sticky, "and took pictures of everything, the pictures would be useless without knowing which key to follow." "Speaking of pictures," Kay said, "do you think you could reproduce the blueprints for us, George? We could study them with you, it might help." Sticky shook his head noncommittally. "I can try it as a last resort, but it would take me hours, and, well, I don't have your artistic abilities, you know." "Good point," Kate considered. "You aren't exactly steady with a pencil." At this, Sticky narrowed his eyes, but he couldn't disagree, and in fact, he had a feeling that Kate had been trying to put it nicely. "Maybe George can try a draft for a few more important things later," Rennie said, "but I don't think that's how we'll figure out the right key to use. I think the answer is in the message Mr. Benedict sent us yesterday. The first three lines helped us find the blueprints, right? My guess is the last line will tell us how to use them." Kate slugged the last of her tea and copped a cup onto her saucer. "Right, let's get this figured out." She turned to Constance, who was looking increasingly sullen, and said, "Do you think you could try again to remember exactly what Mr. Benedict said?" "I told you," Constance mumbled, "something about a door made out of clay, a kind of door that the French use. That's all I've got. I was fighting a war in my head at the time." "We know," Rennie said gently, "and you're having to ward off the listener even as we speak. We all know this is incredibly hard for you." "And frankly, amazing," Kate said. "It's amazing what you're doing." "Agreed," said Sticky. "Agreed," came Ty's voice from under the table. "Agreed," said Rennie. Constance looked as though she wasn't certain whether to cry or scream. Her face contorted and she averted her eyes. "Thanks," she said. "I'm sure you maybe mean that a little, but I also know you're just trying to soften the blow, because you want me to leave. I can't be here when you solve this." It was true. Between Constance and Ty, there were too much risk of information leaking out. Sticky had the blueprints in his head, Ty couldn't control his abilities, and Constance was a ceaseless battle with the listener, whose own abilities might increase at any time. They all knew it. "We don't want you to leave," Rennie said, "and we all mean that more than a little, but we do have to be careful." Constance gave a curt nod and arose from her chair. "Come on, Ty," she said, rapping on the table. "Let's go find something fun to do." "Can we play with the husher and the blab?" they heard Ty asked. "I think you just like saying those words," Constance said. "I do," Ty said, emerging from beneath the table. "You can get the husher," Sticky cautioned, "but you'll need to take it elsewhere, Ty. There's no playing in the blab." Kate flickered her eyebrows, delighted to hear Sticky use her word. Rennie caught Constance by the arm. Before you go, can you tell us what the message looked like in your mind? Kay considered. It didn't look like anything. It was just Dad's voice. He wasn't trying to send me images. That's what I figured, Rennie said. Images would have been too risky. They would have given away too much. Okay, thank you, Constance. And listen, he said, squeezing her arm. We won't be long. You've already helped me more than you realize. Constance shot him a wiry look. Well, I'm glad your confidence is back. That should help. But you shouldn't say stuff like that. It's hard for me not to think about it, you know? You're right, Rennie said, frowning. That was bad judgment. I only wanted to make me feel better. I know. But you're just wasting your energy. Constance pulled away from him. Just figure it out so we can move on. She looked down at Ty, who was butting his head against her hip like a goat, evidently trying to move her toward the door. Okay, little goat, lead the way. Ty bleated happily, and the two of them went out. Rennie watched them go and then turned back to Kate and Sticky, who were watching him expectantly. Well, Sticky asked. I don't know yet, Rennie replied. I was trying not to think about it too hard while they were in the room. Kate pointed at him. But you think you're close. What we heard you asked her. You weren't just satisfying your curiosity. You think it matters that she could only hear his voice. We've known from the beginning that images are easier to communicate, Rennie said. Mr. Benedict might simply have imagined a piece of paper with those words written clearly on it. That wouldn't have given away images of Orion, right? It would have been like Ty seeing Mr. Curtin's letter in George's head. That's plausible, Sticky said. It could also be that they thought Constance would find his voice comforting. Both could be true, Kay said. Doing several things at once is kind of the way Mr. Benedict operates. So what do you think, Rennie? And by that I mean think, Rennie. Rennie did. He closed his eyes, took a deep breath, and thought, poetic license. He did it for the sound. Rennie opened his eyes. Okay, he said, I have it.